What's up, everyone? I'm your podcast host, Chinet, and you're listening to the Hopkins Hacks podcast. Everyone has a unique journey of exploration at Hopkins, and our podcast puts your favorite faculty, alumni, and students in the hot seat to share their experiences and takeaways. We discuss the four key pillars of college life, including work, relationship, health, and play. In this episode of Hopkins Hacks, we are joined by Ariel Bao, who is an alumni at Johns Hopkins from the class of 2022 and currently works at Google as a software engineer. Within 4 years, she's managed to double major in computer science and AMS, along with master's in applied math and statistics and a minor in voice from Peabody.
Hi, my name is Ariel, and I just graduated this year with a bachelor in computer science and applied math and a master's in applied math at the same time in 4 years. And I also did a minor in music. And during my time at Hopkins, I was involved in a few student clubs, including founding a student think tank when I was still an IS major. And then I was more involved in the computer science side of things, involved in clubs like ACM, Association of Computing Machinery, and I was the president of ACM in my fourth year.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much for sharing all of that. So you mentioned that you have a think tank and you founded a think tank as part of an IS major. Can you speak a bit more towards that kind of experience of founding a club on campus and what is that like for you?
There was another IS student who was like 3 years ahead of me when I was in my freshman year. And because we shared the same major and we knew each other, so then he introduced me to a group of total of 6 people. And we talked about how there was a lack of like research resources for international studies major or humanities major in general from aspects other than like research through a classroom setting or like through a fund, like a serious research program. So we wanted to come in to support with people who just like to have discussions outside of class, especially since in Hopkins, there are not a lot of like academic resources focused on like a trans-Pacific region, which our think tank was also focusing on. So we decided to found this to provide a platform for people to have discussions, have weekly meetings, and just to talk about things in general and also to publicize some of the things they said. And actually, after a few months, now this think tank has 2 branches, one in Sciences Po in Paris and the other in Hopkins. And we also maintain our regular website, which we invite students to come and contribute their pieces, and then we edit them and then put them out.
I'm just curious to learn a bit more. So when you were founding this club, did you have other similar clubs in other campuses or institutions that you were able to base out of, or did you guys create everything from scratch on your own?
I think it was almost everything as scratch. We sent a lot of different emails to people who we thought potentially could be our advisors. And we also expanded eventually to like our peers, people of our age, and increasingly even to like high school students who was interested and had a lot of free time to in their gap year or like the month before college were able to contribute something. And then we changed the format from our initial goal to connect more with think tanks or established institutions. That was our initial goal when we founded this. And then it increasingly steered towards being more of like a peer platform led by peers, and everything like editing, sending out emails, and like organizing some summits, et cetera, who a lot of other people in the think tank were in charge of later on, were all by done of people of our age instead of reaching out to somebody who are already very experienced in this area. After I have left the think tank, it's now still actively running, and there's like a RISE summit organized on a yearly or semesterly basis. And there are other platforms such as our official website, and it can regularly like updates new articles written by students, generally based on like global affairs happening at this moment. So I think that's a pretty cool thing to do.
Oh, wow. And so you mentioned earlier that you guys have expanded a branch to Paris. That sounds very atypical of most student organizations. Can you speak a bit more towards the decision that has led to and what impact it has had on the club as a whole?
The majority of this contribution come from like our friend Anishka, who is a Czech Republican Chinese mix. And she attended Oxford for a year in an exchange program. And there she expanded around Europe. And then she has a lot of friends in France. And that's how they come together in their East Asia campus to start this think tank in their own branch. Yeah.
Oh, wow. It's interesting to see how you guys have managed to leverage additional Hopkins resources, such as studying abroad, to really expand this club. I was wondering, since you were part of founding it, did you find anything interesting about setting up a new organization?
Okay, I would talk about the administration side of things. Like I applied twice, and the second time we were able to pass and become an officially recognized campus group.
I was wondering, for potential listeners out there, what helped you guys get it through the second time that you guys didn't manage to get through the first time?
I think the first thing is really to have everything ready. And the first time we got rejected partially because of our constitution. So on Hopkins, a lot of like rules on how much like rights the leadership of each organization should have and how should the recruitment process be, et cetera. It can get very detailed. So I say really do a lot of research on policies like this internally to school and write a constitution and provide other relevant documents in place so that they can always come to you and you have an answer ready. So back in my time, I think there was a group of us who were like researching more into the school documents and policies. There was a lot of them. And I think the constitution was taken from another similar student organization, back to the question you asked earlier, from another school. And we had to adhere to the Hopkins guideline instead. And I think the second is really to make sure that there are such needs on campus for such student groups. So there's a requirement for student roster to reach, I think, a minimum of 15. So I make sure that the club you found will be able to benefit students with similar interests. And there's a need and a space for that. To do that, we first reached out in the Chinese communities and then to our friends and then people who have taken classes in the East Asian department, a studies department, for example, or the IS department. And then we reached that number and then we expanded from there. Yeah, I think those are the two main points. Do research, have everything prepared, have a roster and know how your club is differentiated from the rest of the other on campus.
That's awesome. Thank you so much. It's great hearing from you. I think that definitely there are a lot of potential listeners who are thinking about setting up their own clubs and organizations on campus that would benefit from what you've just shared. Earlier, you mentioned that you started this while you were still studying international studies, but you ended up actually transitioning towards computer science. Would you mind elaborating a bit more about that kind of transition? And what are the factors that contributed to that kind of decision-making?
Yeah, sure. I think it's an interesting story for me. I first came in as a philosophy major. I wanted to do something of like religious studies philosophy. And then I transferred to the international studies thinking that it could be more broad. And it also allows me to continue my studies of economics, which I did a bit in high school and found interesting. At the same time, I was still also having a applied math major since my first year. And then in my second year, I switched from international studies to computer science. So I think the decision is very personal. The first is that at that time, the international kind of relations between countries were starting to get interesting. A lot of tensions arose between, say, like the US and China. And I felt there were not a lot of channels for people to express their thoughts and really make an impact on others, because I felt at that time, the sentiments on the internet, they were so firm for a lot of people that by just reading articles, et cetera, it will be very hard to persuade them in the first place. And then I also took a few classes with regard to China studies and East Asia studies in school in Hopkins, but felt that there were still very limited number of them. And the whole curriculum was very Euro or like Western centric. I was more interested in the Asian side of the international affairs. And thought that because like our words as college students couldn't really make an impact on people who were already having a very clear, I guess, even say like stubborn or like very fixed idea of things. And secondly, because of the school resources weren't leaning on the side that the branch that I was interested in. And I was also discovering computer science at that time. And I felt that CS might be more suitable for me because it's a subject where it's like the political focus, et cetera, were removed and everything you built could just maybe benefit mankind in a more general way without being scrutinized in some sort of lens. Yeah.
I see. That's interesting. So in fact, you actually still have much more of an interest in this kind of IS and philosophy side of things. It's just that the school's curriculum didn't necessarily align with the specific areas of interest that you have.
Yeah, and also it was the general sentiments of the public at that time. And my freshman year internship was also related to both. It was like a VC company and our team was more like cross-border. So both China and US kind of business. And it was like sitting at the cross-section of both. And then I was like exposed to technology at the same time and thought of, hey, CS might be like another good choice as well.
That's awesome. And so I'm curious to understand, because you seem to come from a very diverse academic background. The skills that are needed for philosophy is different from engineering and computer science. And so I was wondering whether if the skills that you've had studying philosophy or IS or any kind of like concepts that you picked up there has helped your understanding of computer science, perhaps maybe in the ethics sense or potentially in terms of the way that you approach your current working career.
Yeah, sure. So a lot of the academic backgrounds, which we call diverse, actually came from my high school curriculum. In my high school, I did a bit of like epistemology, which is the study of knowledge and looking at it through a philosophy lens, like what you can learn and what are the limits of learning and is what you actually really knowledge, etc. And I also did like economics under the A-level curriculum. So I think they're still relevant to my later, like more engineering side of things, because I think first they made me a writer and give me sense of abilities to reason rationally. So I think these are really important, even if you are like say doing engineering work on studying computer science, you still have to communicate ideas to people who are not that familiar with your background. Say if you are a TA, you have to communicate some ideas in a more, I guess, common sense or easily understandable way. And when I was doing my internship, you have to communicate quite complicated technical ideas to people who might not have that engineering background before to persuade them that this project was worth looking at, for example. So I do think that these backgrounds give me an ability to write well and to reason well. And I also think they made me more conscious of the ethics behind the engineering side of things. Like computer ethics is still a required course at Hopkins. And even in later upper level classes like machine learning, deep learning, like AI, et cetera, like the topic of what we can do, what we should do is still of a central focus of this curriculum. So I do think that on the philosophy or economic side, the humanity side of like the knowledge breadth will enable you to grasp these ideas and be more conscious of like how the things you build will impact the humanity and like in a more broad way.
So just now you mentioned that you have many different backgrounds. I know a different identity or background that you have is that you're an international student who comes from China. And so you mentioned that you also found an internship, for example, at a VC company. And I know that you found multiple other internship opportunities at software engineering companies. I was wondering, as an international student, can you speak a bit more towards navigating the internship landscape, whether that be OIS or potentially having to find visa sponsorships, just to speak more about that process for additional international students who are in a similar situation?
I took a long detour in my internship seeking process. Like I wasn't really decided on what I wanted to do in my freshman year. So there were a few options for me like finance or consulting or like tech, etc. And then in my freshman year, I sort of wanted to look at the intersection of both. And then I ended up interning at a VC company. And this internship was found through like referral and this person who became my colleague later, I knew him through a China-US summit, which I was also in the organization team in my freshman year. So first advice for international students is maybe like to know more people and to expand your network so that you don't know who might pop up and to be the person that will help you in the future. And I think knowing more people and trying to expand your path and possibilities is always important for people who enter the college and are not very determined in which path they should go take in the first place. And then in my second year on, I was looking more towards a consulting path and interviewed for some very good companies and also one really great finance companies. And then because I was too distracted by a lot of responsibility and activities I was involved in. I was underprepared in that time. And moving on, I thought that the side of consulting and finance that I was interested in, which involves like more interdisciplinary skills and fast deep learning curve, etc., was also being able to found in like the tech industry, for example. Then in the third year, I was aiming for PM instead, like a product manager role in the tech industry as I delved deeper into the CS curriculum. Yes. Then because PM roles are really hard to find, so eventually ended up being a software engineer, which I really enjoy at this moment. So this is my brief story of like where I get to a career at this point. So then back to the question on advice for international students. The first piece of advice I share with international students, as I mentioned earlier, is that maybe try to grow your network and try to talk to different people. I think building mentorship is really important for students in general to just see how things might work in the industry and to get information that's not readily available in the curriculum. And maybe you might, if you're really lucky, you might get a chance of like referral in the future. I think the second piece is really to weigh on your interest and the easiness level, the difficulty of breaking an entrance into different industries. So I think this sounds very, I guess, terrifying, but also realistic. So a lot of people I know wanted to break into finance in our first or second year. And then some of us gradually realized that we were just aiming for the fame and full of it and not really that interested. So that's why you see a lot of people change their majors in second, third year. So I think trying to explore different things and not just going with a stream is also very important. And some of us also stopped pursuing a finance career. Also because if you want to stay and work in the United States, for example, you need sponsorship. A lot of companies have a limitation or like a general pause on like sponsoring foreigners since the start of the COVID. So I would say also weigh your interest against the possibilities of staying in the current industry or staying for a specific role. And I think the other piece of advice is just maybe start to prepare early. This is not just limited to international students. Always make your path broad, I think broad at first, and then maybe you can narrow it down and maybe deep dive into a specific branch. So if I were to do it again in my second year, first year, I would probably have taken computer science classes earlier so that I would have a better resume in my second year and I would be able to secure like a software engineering job earlier. And if you get a software engineering job, you might still be able to switch to other roles in the tech industry. But if otherwise, it might be very difficult. So I would advise always going for something that's more hardcore or at least something that gives you more options later on if you're not determined again. And this is not limited to international students.
You mentioned briefly there that during your second year, you were tied up in a lot of other commitments with other additional clubs on campus. And you mentioned earlier that you founded one of the initial organizations on campus. And also you've also taken a lot of interesting classes such as deep learning and machine learning. I guess my next question for you related to this topic of internship is that compared to clubs and additional organizations, how useful is an internship in terms of helping you guide your potential career and life goals?
Okay, I think, again, it's a question that really depends on like individual choices and individual goals. So I can speak from my perspective and people who are like me, who wants to start working right after your college years and instead of pursuing for a PhD degree. So I do think in this case, maybe an internship might help you stand out more than club involvement in your college year. So I really say internship is a good way to help you stand out in showing that you're able to like learn how things are done in the industry. You're able to speak their vocabulary and to know how the whole things flow, like products like release or like development phase, for example. You're able to really show the HRs, like the recruiters, that are something that's, I think, hardcore enough and also think legitimate enough. If you talk about your class projects, I think, of course, they have great values, but it's just a little bit hard to really weigh that against like an industry level standard internship. And for a class project, I would say it's more about like how you brand it. So I would say maybe try to aim for an internship first, if that's the one thing that will guarantee to have value on your resume.
I guess one final question about internships that I have for you is that Were there any big resources at Johns Hopkins University that helped you to navigate that hiring process?
I would break down the internship seeking process into two phases. The first is before you submit your resume, like all the steps that build on to your resume being submitted and being looked at by people in the industry, your recruiters. And the second phase is when you receive an interview, how you prepare for that sort of technical or behavioral interview. So I think at least up to the first phases, but it definitely take advantage of the Career Center's resources in improving your resume, updating your LinkedIn. They still have workshops on that, and finding a counselor to just ask your questions away. And there are other clubs that might be able to help you do that. And even in the phase before you write up your resume, which is in the improving yourself phase. And a few several clubs include like the ACM and HUSAM. They have on course selection panel, etc., that you can know which courses are good for what aspects. And they also have resources of connecting you with seniors and also asking alumni to share their experiences, both of their work and of their job application, so that you can both build your network and learn about things to avoid and things to definitely do in the application process. And in the second phase of this job seeking, which is to prepare for your technical or behavioral interview, I would say the alumni network actually helped me a lot, not just for the CS, but more for consulting, actually. I was able to contact alumni who were working in the companies I was aiming for, and they were kind enough to help other people from their same school to look at my resume by their standards and also give me mock interviews. So if you, because they act in the interviewer's shoes themselves, their feedback for you is really important and it can help you gauge yourself against the candidate pool and by their standards. Try to maintain good relations with the alumni network will enable you to ask some questions to them and update your own progress to them so that you will be able to continuously benefit from the alumni network. So that's another advice maybe I'll give to you, Hopkins students. And I think the alumni network, like Hopkins alumni, they were generally very generous with their time and they were very willing to help with questions, even in the first phase of, like I was saying, before you submit your resume. So they helped throughout the job seeking process, I would say, for me and also for a few of my friends.
I was just wondering, do you think that being an international student places you at a disadvantage compared to local students in terms of finding opportunities in the US?
I would say yes for some and no for the others. I think it's very important to know for your industry or this company, if they would put additional restrictions on international students. So it's definitely good to find that out. For example, in my freshman year, I submitted a lot of applications to the same company, different roles, and then found out that they don't actually sponsor international students. So definitely do research on that. And I think for some companies and industries, that trend is less so. For example, for tech and for the larger tech companies like Google, Meta, etc. I think they treat international students and a lot of domestic students equally in terms of recruiting talent. So in that case, there's not too much to be worried about.
I see. I guess for students, they must clearly do their research in advance to make sure that whatever status that they're in, that is aligned with the employment requirements and eligibility criteria of the certain company. Thank you so much for sharing so much about your professional experiences in terms of internships. Related to internship experience is like career pathfinding. I was wondering, how did you end up settling at the current job that you're at after graduation?
Okay, so first, why did I choose to be a software engineer? In my freshman internship of being like a summer venture analyst, I found it very hard for me to, it's a very interesting job, of course, like I was exposed to a lot of ideas and trends in the industry and being able to witness, like be able to at least see and hear how, for example, some cool technologies are used and in different products, and how small companies still build on cool things and try to compete and stand out and source for funds, etc. Then I found it very hard for me to really grasp and assess products at that time. I was mostly doing so based on the business side of the information. And I felt like without a hands-on trial or being able to understand the tech stack, it would be difficult to really make meaningful contribution in assessing investments or assessing a company, like a startup, for example. So then I decided to invest more and learn more of the technical side. So that's why, partially why I transferred to CS major. And in my second year, I wanted to be in PM, a product manager more, because I felt that role is more like a interdisciplinary, because that role has a lot fewer openings throughout the United States. I didn't land an internship that I wanted, but I think doing SWE is still a good start, because at companies like Google, they still value product managers with technical understanding and being able to talk to engineers. Generally, this journey, because of the realization that I wasn't getting technical enough at that point, and also that knowing that technical skills are very important to generate a lot of roles in the tech industry, I switched to the software engineer role.
That's very insightful. So you mentioned that you're currently a software engineer at Google. I was just wondering, do you think that as a career, for career development, is it important for you to find a large company, large size company, or an established company such as Google right after graduation? Or what is it like to potentially explore like a startup or a smaller size company after graduation?
Okay, I think both are very cool choices and might fit different people's needs and different people's personalities. So just based on my current understanding for now, I think if you go to a startup, you will shorten many roles. You put multiple hats on yourself and your work scope might be defined like this way, but you have to probably solve a lot of different problems. I think for people who like more clearly defined things and like a set out path, a larger company might be more suitable for you. And for people who are more adventurous in nature and just want to experience like a larger scope and a lot of responsibilities to quickly grow themselves, smaller companies might be more suitable for them. And I think an additional benefit for joining larger company is that in your initial years of starting your work, you might have more established principles to follow. So I think that's a good way to train my coding skills and helping me to know a lot of like internal tools that are used in companies, etc., that are all of that otherwise not really readily available in smaller companies. For example, if you go to a larger companies, your code guidelines are very clearly written and the expectations for code neatness and conciseness and like how like code review process, for example, are more established in larger companies, whereas smaller companies or like startup type of companies might sacrifice like code neatness for working code for efficiency at least. And another additional benefit for working at larger companies is that if you want to transfer to another company afterwards, your work experience these years as software engineering title will be recognized and transferable between at least among the larger companies or some medium large size companies as well. But if you go to a startup size level of company, and if you want to transfer to a large company afterwards, they might not actually recognize your years of experience there. And you might, from what I heard, you might like downgrade and your like level, and there's like level L3, L4, for example, of your seniority. And yeah, so I think you do have that risk to take if you want to join a smaller company right away after graduation.
That's very interesting. Some general sentiments and insights there also equally apply to finding an internship and in terms of the types of learning that you'll gain. So that's mostly the kind of questions that I wanted to ask about career development as well as internship. Backtracking a little bit about your academic experience at Hopkins. I understand that you were a TA, I think, for discrete maps. Would you mind speaking to a bit more about that kind of experience and how that has helped you develop your academic journey, or potentially how that might have contributed to you developing in general?
Yeah, sure. So I do think being a TA is a very fulfilling experience. Like I only have done the TA job once in my sophomore fall, and I was actually China's TA at the time for discrete math, and that's how we got to know each other. Yeah. And there are still 4 or 5 people in that class that I still keep in contact with. And it's very heartwarming to say like after 2 years, 1 year, and like you're in a campus activity and somebody suddenly approached you, say, hey, did you teach me discrete math like last year? That actually, I think it's very heartening for me. And I wanted to be a TA at that time to be able to like further internalize that learning and be able to retain knowledge. And also, I know that's a course I did well on. So I was confident that I would be able to bring that knowledge to teach others. And that's why I chose to be a TA at that time. I think TA does require some time commitment. So I generally spend around 10 hours per week, like marking homeworks, giving out sections, and like holding office hours, etc. Do you take that into consideration in your time management timetable? And I also think it's interesting to look at things from a different perspective. Like you generally approach knowledge from the side of being taught the students, and then it's interesting to be able to impart it to somebody who's younger and was at the same, I guess, point as you in that course. So I think, yeah, it's generally very fulfilling and it helps you to assimilate that knowledge even more in depth.
I see. Can you speak more specifically about how that potentially have helped you reinforce your learning by taking on a different perspective as an educator rather than a learner?
Yeah, sure. I do think like different people approach the same class from differently. So at that time, like in my class, there were people who were doing humanities major and people who were doing engineering, natural sciences, and like math, for example. All the things that I thought was very straightforward to me might appear difficult to others. And some topic that I spent a lot of time on might be straightforward to one person because he has thought of a different way to explain this. So I tried to make my section more like discussion-based. So I tried to like throw a lot of questions to people and the students would like answer. And yeah, I remember China answered a lot of questions. So I think that an interactive setting is the best atmosphere for people to really learn how other people arrived at the answer that they did. So it's really like speaking out your thought process and being able to learn from others of like different methods of approaching solving the same problem. And I also had to think of many ways to explain the same problem because some of them might work better for like people who have studied science and some of them work better for like humanities students, etc. So it's generally very interesting to think of every possible angle of like explanation and then also learn from your students even as they might have raised point that you might never notice before. Yeah.
Oh, wow. I guess by considering how you solve a problem from multiple angles, that helps further deepen your understanding with the subject.
Definitely.
That's amazing. And that's great to hear. And I guess I was wondering if you would speak towards just campus jobs more in general and what your opinion is about like doing a TA compared to other jobs and whether the time commitment is worth it.
Oh, I actually haven't done a lot of campus job. I think this is the only one I did actually. I know there are a lot of different kinds available. For example, you can be a residential advisor, an RA, who's in charge of helping students navigate their dorm experiences. And I know there's other part-time jobs like being research assistant and others like working at different, say, cafe or restaurants on campus or even being like a fitness trainer, etc. And I would say I chose TA just because I thought my skills fit that role better. And I was interested in like building the academic and side of my resume more at that time. But I do think taking into consideration like the salary, the time commitment, and what you can gain from it, and if you really like the job, are all interesting factors to take into consideration.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, I totally agree with you that you have to consider multiple factors when making these kind of big decisions, because after all, we should definitely be students first when we're at Hopkins. But it was great to hear you share about your experiences being a TA, and I fondly remember being a student under guidance. And it was thanks to those experiences that I'm currently inspired to be a TA myself. So next semester, I'll actually be a TA for computer science and entrepreneurship. And I'll definitely keep you posted in terms of my experiences with that. And we can potentially chat together.
Okay. Yeah. Congrats. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. So yeah, other than being a TA, I know that you've done really well academically. You've managed to complete a master's as well within the 5 years. I was wondering if you could speak briefly to that kind of experience and what is it like to do a combined degree at Johns Hopkins?
Yeah, I decided to do a master in my third year just because I thought it could fit my four-year curriculum. So I could graduate early with both degrees and why not? And I chose applied math just because I thought applied math, like having a master's makes a difference more compared to maybe doing a computer science master's. I asked a few people in the industry and they thought that a computer science master and undergrad might not actually be that of a difference in finding a job. So just from a practical consideration aspect, I chose the applied math master's. I also chose the coursework master's after talking to my advisor, meaning that I completed more coursework and didn't do a like graduation cornerstone project, which is a research project. Both are cool. And from hindsight, I actually would rather myself did a one with a cornerstone project instead. I think that puts your knowledge into practice, into developing something new. I think a coursework and master's is also beneficial in letting you explore more aspects. You can take courses of more breadth or just more courses focused in one sub area in total. And yeah, I would just say maybe plan it out well is a first priority, and knowing what you do, what you want to do. And if you really don't want, I know people who have dropped out, and I think that's perfectly fine too, or has switched masters. I think it's all about a learning process, learning about what you can do and what you want to do, like your interests. So I just say maybe one thing I would have changed is I would have taken a more focused curriculum in my first year instead of doing here a bit and there under different departments, different majors, considering that I would be doing a lot of focused work in one area in the future. Yeah.
I see. And so do you think the master's contribute a lot to jobs in general, or is that major just specific?
I don't think it contributed a lot in job searching in the software engineering's perspective, but I do think that it has its benefits. For example, in some industries, a master's degree might comfort you more salary base. And as far as I know, for software engineering, I think for both MS and bachelor's degree holders, like your starting level, L3, is the same. And I think if you want to like go with a lottery for a working visa, I think master's degree has some advantages, but I'm not sure, entirely sure. Maybe do some research on that, not have my words instead. And yeah, I also know people who enroll that program just to lengthen their duration of the studies, so have more opportunities in exploring different jobs. They have one more summer, for example. So I do think that there are advantages associated to it. And it again boils down to what each student wants with this degree.
I see. But yeah, no, I'm still super impressed by how you managed to complete the computer science degree and as well as the master's, especially since you started off with philosophy and then transitioned into IS, dabbling with potentially some kind of economics, and then finalizing in computer science and still finishing everything within the 4-year time period, while also, I think, doing a music minor. And so yes. I was wondering, are there any resources on Johns Hopkins campus that you have used to help you manage your degree planning and that has helped you manage all this overhead? Because I'd imagine each degree has its own specific set of requirements.
I see. I didn't use a lot of resources from Hopkins. I found one thing that's really helpful is through talking to advisors, and also like the CS department has their own degree planning worksheet. And that when you input different course titles in your future year and a future semesters and this semester, it will tell you for each requirement how many credits you have completed and are about to complete. So that one very smart Excel sheets helped me throughout my CS career. And also talking to advisors and checking with your like admin from different departments regularly really helps. So they can even get to remind you that you need to do some things if you check with them early. And they can also help you better plan out for similar degrees how to either create synergy so that you can maybe use some courses for the other degree and what requirements overlap and which ones do not, for example. So I do think checking more with the advisors, the administrators, and using like the Excel sheets, if your department has one, are useful.
That's awesome. Great to hear your thoughts about this. I guess for students who are listening and are thinking about degree planning, I know that there is a group of students on campus who are leading a student project called UCredit, which is essentially trying to tackle this problem and allow you to create different variations of plans about that. So if you're interested in UCredit and potentially how you can use it to enhance your degree planning and create different plans for yourself, feel free to check out the description in I was just wondering, in terms of more general sense, do you have any study tips or practical guidance for students who are looking to improve them? Academic performance.
I do think my fourth year, it was also like it was not as smooth as my previous years, just because a lot of other things kicked in and there was a more like less focus on studies. So I do think that as you grow like more into the upper level courses, do start to allocate more time to study them, because they're definitely going to take more time than your lower level classes. And for each class, really to find out like what is it that will affect your grades. For some classes, you can do really well on tests and that might suffice for a good grade. And some classes you might need to, it's like more like a marathon. You need to put good efforts into every component. So eventually your grades will be good. Just having good planning strategies for each classes really matters. And secondly, is really to like maybe always gauge your performance relatively to others if you can. For example, for deep learning classes, like we did really, really well. And we won like the best project award in the final presentation of the semester. But our final report isn't as good because we didn't meet a lot of expectations set for that report. And everybody else did very well. Like the whole class average was super good. So I would always say ask for feedback and try to gauge your performance in your class, especially if that class is curved. And also trying to know what are the rubrics for different components for classes that don't set out clear guidelines. And I'm checking with your TAs and other instructors, if you can, would always be good. Yeah.
No, that's awesome. I'm glad that you're able to share so much with me. And I guess that there are different types of classes. Certain classes are like exams, others are more marathons. Do you have specific suggestions about how to prepare for exams for students who want to potentially perform a bit better?
I see. I'm sure everybody at Hopkins is very smart and is able to do well on exams. So I don't particularly have a lot to say on this, but I would say that try to maybe, if you can, find past year papers set by the same instructor to get to know their style, or the kind of questions that they ask. And also try to maybe think from the instructor's perspective on what they're testing you on for different exams. So some instructors, they like to test you on things mentioned in their like classes. So for those classes, I would focus more on reviewing like the slides, the content that they go through in class. And for some other classes that it's very, say, computational heavy, or like they give you examples and they give you things that are not taught, but similar to examples given in class. And you might transfer that skill to transfer that knowledge to talk in like your in answering those questions. So for those, I would probably just memorize the general principles and keywords, etc., and then try to reflect them in my answers. And my answers till this point is very much based on for engineering courses, by the way. I think there's a whole different set of rules studying for humanity courses, but I didn't take a lot of them in my last years.
That's interesting to hear. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts about your work, whether that be career or your academics and internships. But I guess there's more to the Hopkins experience than just work itself, right?
Hey there, I've got one favor to ask you. Share this episode with one person who you know would benefit from it from the Hopkins community. If you're on YouTube, show us your love by subscribing and smashing the bell icon below and commenting as well. We can't wait to read your reviews on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Any suggestions for us? Feel free to leave it there. Go Hop!